26098 Reel 1.
Ben Whitchurch, Reel 1. Can you tell me first of all when you were born?
8th of July 1931.
Yeah, where was that?
In Bristol, here.
And what did your father do?
He was basically in his younger days, he was a coal miner in the local pits. But during the was it the First World War? Yes, he was in the Navy. Uh-huh. He got torpedoed twice and survived. Then he retired from being a caretaker at the Legion in Whitchurch. And actual Whitchurch, the actual district.
And did your mother work?
No, well, not to mine. She had 7 children, so I don't think there was any time to go out to work. Keep bringing the family up. Yes.
Where
yes.
did you come in the family?
Third.
Third.
Yeah.
So, where did you go to school?
Well, I started off here in Bristol in the infant school, which is in over the other side of town. Progressed up to the what do you call it, secondary modern school in those days, in Connaught Road. Just a basic education, nothing special.
What age did you leave?
And left school at the age of 14. Yes, and started work.
What did you want to do? Is there anything you wanted to do?
No, I don't think so. I think I had no intentions or anything in mind what to do after I left school. In fact, I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do. No.
So what did you do?
Well, first of all, I started off in the local foundry pottery. They were called Pountney's Pottery in the centre of Bristol. Working in the actual kiln area, taking racks of plates into the kilns for processing. Didn't stand out very long because it didn't agree with me. And then I told my mother that I didn't like it, and the next thing I know, she's hiking me off to almost in the centre of Bristol to a family butcher's concern called Harding's, who were the butchers of the Bristol in those days. And I became a little butcher boy. Yes.
With a bike.
Oh, yes, with a bike. I think, with the greatest respects of the younger generation today, work in those days is entirely different to what it is today. Referring to the bike, I would cycle 5, 6, 8 miles in a round trip with a basket on the front, making deliveries, and that would take me all day.
Yeah. It's all up and downhill in Bristol.
It's all up and downhill, yes, yes, it certainly is, yeah.
So you were quite fit then?
Oh yes, quite fit, yes. Oh yes, because as I say, cycling and working in a butcher shop. And in those days, there was no entertainment as such as we have today, so you went to the local youth club and joined in the volleyball, tennis, and whatever, swimming. So it kept you fit, yes.
Did you like sport?
No, I was the only one in the actual family that didn't get my elder brother and my younger brother, brothers I should say, joined in the local street football, as it was in those days, and local street cricket teams. But I never seemed to join in. I was in a bystander. I never had any intention of getting into physical sport. No, no.
What were you interested in? Did you have any other interests or hobbies?
Well, not mainly. Going to the youth club in the evenings. But actual hobbies, no. I didn't have any hobbies in those days, no.
But the war was ending now, was it?
This is the Second World War.
Yes, it was coming to an end.
Yes, I mean, during the actual war, as you probably know, well, history is telling you that Bristol was heavily bombed and blitzed. We were very fortunate where we lived over the other side of town that we didn't get any actual in our street, but two streets away they flattened a few houses, you know. So yes, yes.
Did you take an interest in the progress of the war? Was it something that interested you?
Well, the actual progress in interest in it was watching the dog fights over Bristol. Yes, because they are the fast planes like they are today. They were the old propeller jobs, and you could sit in the looking out the bedroom window over the city of Bristol, watching the dog fights. Yes, yes, it was, that way.
Did you ever imagine yourself going in the military?
Not at that time. I think as I became closer to the age of 18. Realising that national service had to be done, then I think towards the end, towards the age 18, then I started thinking about what I would do and where I would go do whatever part of the Army, Navy, or Air Force that I went into.
Of course, the Gloucesters are based in Bristol. Did you have a sense of pride in?
Oh yes, I mean the Gloucestershire Regiment was the county regiment in those days, and. That was the thing. You wouldn't look at any other regiment. You wouldn't even consider any other regiment other than your county regiment. Yes. Yeah.
So national service coming nearer. Were you dreading it?
Well, only in as much as needing. Obviously, being a breadwinner, that was my main concern. That although it was pittance in those days, if you take your work. You work 48 hours for £1.25. I don't think people would do that today. No. So I think that was my main concern. In as much as I say, being a part of a breadwinner.
So did you think about the national service as a bit of an opportunity then, or as an opportunity to see something different?
Well, possibly the knowing that you had to serve 18 months in whatever you decided to choose your career. I was thinking mainly of looking at the Army, obviously, and the possibility of going abroad. One has never been outside of England in those days. There was no such flying off to wherever. Weston-super-Mare, the local beach, was the only place you went for a holiday in those days. So looking at the perspective of being in the whatever forces I decided to join, as I became closer to 18 and having the letter saying to go to Pruitt Street Mission Hall for my physical.
What was that like? You arrived all
keen? Well, yes, in actual fact, where I worked, it was probably the actual fitness hall where we went to was about 500 to 600 yards away. So I knew what was happening. You went there and you were put through various fitness tests to
what
see.
What sort of things?
I think there were probably 5 or 6 doctors, and they were in cubicles. And you progressed through a cubicle, and each doctor did his own little thing. Of course, you were naked at the time.
Bit of a surprise, wasn't it?
Well, yes, a little bit embarrassing, really, because being a homely boy, I'd never been in no sports, nothing, so I'd never been in contact with men or young chaps at my age being naked. No, very embarrassing at times, but there, we got through it all right.
Yeah.
It was the different aspects of the doctors that were asking you. Different things: eyesight test, hearing test, touch your toes test, physical, heartbeat, medical, and psychiatry.
What did those psychiatrists ask you?
I think they were asking you different questions to see what your response was to the question mainly, and just seeing if you were alert and you weren't a dumbo. Yeah. Yes.
So you passed.
Yes. Maybe fortunately or unfortunately, but yes, I came out A1, and my boss at that time was very disappointed. He said, he said, there's one thing. He said, you're fit, that's the main thing, and he accepted it. Yes, I was going to go become a national serviceman. Yes.
So you got notice to report where?
I got notice on the Thursday morning, shan't forget it, to report to Bulford Camp in Salisbury Plain. They sent you a travel warrant to exchange for a ticket to go to there. And arriving at Temple Meads to catch the train to down to Salisbury to Bulford. But I bumped into quite a few of my old friends that lived locally, obviously all the same age, and got very excited to think that we were all going together. I knew somebody that was going, you know, it became quite a thing.
So, what unit were you joining then?
Well, when I first went, let me just go back a little while. When we finished the medical, you then went on to an army officer and it asked you what you wanted to do. And I said I wanted to join the county regiment and I would go nowhere else. And that's what happened. I was very, very fortunate that I did actually join the county regiment. During the basic training in Bulford on Salisbury Plain, I actually had the Gloucestershire flashes on my uniform, so I was very pleased about that. There are other Dorset regiments and Wiltshire regiments.
And this was a general service unit, was it?
Yes, this was a basic training. You went in a greenhorn.
What was it like, that reception there? Because, I mean, I can imagine the NCOs.
Well, yes. Oh yes, I mean, off the train, into army trucks, and then down to the camp in Bulford. And then reception was, right gentlemen, please get off out your trucks and please line up. And this little Corporal Earl, I always remember, because we used to call him Chunky, he was a little short, stocky bloke. Well, a military medal, by the way, during the war, so he knew what he was talking about. And the first day was basically, right, gentlemen, we'll go down to the storeroom, collect your BD, your battle dresses, and all your, tell them what size shoes, boots you wear. And unfortunately, because I'm a six shoe, I had to have eight. Didn't have six in those days. Collecting all the full complement of, your army career dressing, and then formed out outside and marched past the billets, or walked past the billets, sorry, we wouldn't be marched, we didn't have a march then. And they said, right, so-and-so in this billet. And there was around 20 to the billet, to the hut. Very fortunate, really, because some of the men, some of the chaps that I knew here in Bristol, were billeted in the same hut, so we got on quite well. But the next morning, the army career started.
What was that first night like? Because I'm sure some of
the people. Oh, yeah, there was crying in the beds. I want to go home. We couldn't call them mummy boy. Well, we did call them mummy's boys, Alison. People that had probably been tied to their mother's apron strings so long didn't have to rough and ready it like we did. I mean, family said, you ready and rough it, you know, but. The first night was chat, and talking, lights out, just talking, and eventually we all went to bed. I can't remember the time, but rude awakening came at 5 o'clock the next morning.
So you started having to sort of jump when you were.
Oh, yes. The barrack room door opened, the lights went on, and Chunky all stood his stamp and held his bed. Right, you lazy. Get out of bed. Now. Get out of bed now, I'm telling you. Can you come along? And because somebody hadn't heard him, he actually physically tipped him out of bed. That was the way. That was the only thing. That was their career. In the end, we respected them because they taught us all we knew. But from the day one of going in and saying, gentlemen this, gentlemen that, and then the next day your army actually career started, you think, oh my God, what were you in for?
Was it tough? Because, I mean, there must have been so much they had to teach you, didn't they?
The first thing was you had to learn to march. And you'd be surprised, the people, the amount of men in those days, and maybe today, don't know left from right. You've seen it on video or on films where they right turned in half, the squad turns left. Quick march, and you start off with your left foot or right foot, and it's right hand, left leg, in, right load of idiots. But eventually, after a few days, you got into the thing, and they told you who to salute and not salute. A peak cap you saluted, because the peak cap was an officer. The If you don't know the way, salute, we'll learn you. And I think if the actual army of today is not the army of my day, because you were called fatherless child, you were a Dumbo, you were thick, and when he was saying this, he was probably 2 or 3 inches from your ear. Have you shaved? No, Corporal. Why not? I don't shave, Corporal. You do now. You're in the army. Go shave. And I did. Cut myself several times over that. Oh.
So, what was the attitude of the NCOs?
I mean, the NCOs, they were there to lick you in shape. There was no doubt about it. I mean, you had the hard cases, you had the soft cases of the mummy's boys, and in between you had the majority, and it was their jobs to make a soldier out of you. Yes.
And how difficult did you find it?
Not very difficult, actually. I mean, as I say, I was probably fit. Well, I was fit in those days. I did what I was told to do. I never back chat. And the only thing was during the actual physical jerks and basic training for running around at the camp up the hill. Oof, the hill, yes. And PT. I think PT was probably in a gymnasium vaulting the horses. And one thing I could never do was climb a rope. I could not climb a rope to save my life. And of course, one aspect of the training was you had to climb a rope. And the sergeant came over and he said, you can do everything else, but you can't climb that rope. I said, no, just can't. So he said, come down to the gym tonight. So I went down the gym that night. Right, he said, try this. So I tried it. I managed to get about 2 or 3 feet off the floor. He said, right, go a bit higher. So I said, I can't. I just can't block the legs anyway. He accepted that I had to persevere and train. And I did manage to get about halfway up the rope in the end, but they accepted that halfway up the rope was probably as high as I wanted to go, because it would probably be some 20 to 30 feet off the floor, believe it or not. It's quite high. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So did everybody manage to do all this?
No. I mean, I did things that I would look at other people and say, well, how can't you do that? I've just done it. Especially like in learning how to present arms with the rifle drill. Rifles would go flying everywhere. Oh, God, yeah. Look out! Rifle. Yeah.
So what happened to people who couldn't do all the physical stuff?
Well, I think in the end, with perseverance, I think Corporal Earl was a man that licked him into shape. Yes.
What did you think of Corporal Earl as a man?
Well, at one time I would have killed him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because as the friends knew that we were learning to present arms, and I presented arms, and he looked at me and came on. You haven't got that rifle in the correct position, and he hit the top of the rifle, it came and caught me on the bridge of the nose. I actually split the nose open a little bit, and I was groping with him with the rifle. I couldn't get hold of him. And as it was, fortunately, the sergeant seen it. But in those days, brutality was accepted. I mean, today, they wouldn't even shout at you today, but yes, there was brutality, there's no doubt about that.
I mean, it sounds as though you coped with it quite well. Did some people not?
We had one young chap commit suicide, believe it or not.
Really?
Yes.
At Bulford
Camp, yes. Yeah.
Did you know him?
Not directly, no. I knew of him because of associating with people in the Naffy at night. But no beer drinking, because you couldn't afford to buy it. You had a rate of pay of £1.25 a week. And when they went there for your pay in the initial, they said, what you have to do is to allocate 5 shillings, 25p, to your mother every week. because if you get killed, wherever or whenever, your mother would get a pension. Men didn't think of things like that in those days. I mean, death was the last thing you thought. But in and after at night, you used to talk around, and you got to know your own group as such. For coming towards the end of basic training, you were asked which company you would like to join when you went to your battalions. Because in the training camp in Bulford, all regiments are being trained identically, marching, physical fitness, drill. And then you then leave the training camp and go to your regiment.
So what had happened to this chap who committed suicide? Were you aware he was unhappy or
something? No. I mean, the first we knew of it was obviously the next day when the buzz went round that, I can't remember the young man's name, not now. He had killed himself overnight, went to the toilet and hung himself because he couldn't stand the strain. But in the other aspects of that, I've seen the bullies cow down in the end and cry. Yes, oh yes, it happened. And maybe in those days it was a great thing, because if the corporal and the sergeants could pick the bully out, obviously he got a little sort of more training than anybody else. And they eventually broke them, eventually. There was no messing about, yes.
What did the bullies do to other people?
Cigarettes, mainly. Give me a cigarette. Yeah, give me a cigarette. Or, and they wanted some money, so they'd go around a barrack room and say, I'm going down an alley for a drink. I haven't got any money. It happened. Yes, I think so. It's a nasty thing to say, but they were northerners. They came from the north. Liverpudlians, Newcastle people, and Bristol people. Yes, we have a Bristol bully in there. But they were taken care of in one way or another. Yes, yes.
What facilities did you have in the Naffy?
Just basically cake and coffee. And if you could afford it, beer. If you could afford it. All right. I got a feeling it was probably about something like 2p a pint. All right, 2p a pint. 4p in the old days. 4p you couldn't afford. 2p you couldn't afford to spend that, because you had to buy brasso, you had to buy blanco, you had to buy boot polish. You had to buy that. It wasn't given to you. So you had to have shaving soap, not shaving cream in those days, soap. Toiletries, so all that, and barrack room damages came out of your pay. Well, they took barrack room damages, you never know, because we all used to say, well, we haven't broken anything. There's nothing broken. But every day, I think it was something like 5p a week came out of your pocket for barrack room damages. Yeah. Crazy. Crazy.
So, do you remember any of the officers from Bulford?
No. Not from actual Bulford, no. The only time you really come into contact with officers is if you're on a parade, or the company commander came in and gave you a chat, or you had to go to the theatre to be given the lecture or anything. But to come directly in contact with them, no.
So how long was your basic training?
It took 6 weeks.
6 weeks?
Yeah.
Yes,
definitely. You were proud. You could march. You could halt. You were very fit. And when you did your passing out drill, which was on the note, I think it was getting towards, well, it was winter, because the parade ground had a drop of rain and frozen. But they still decided to go on with the passing out parade. Passing out, you completed your training. You were now officially a soldier. And you had to go through a regimental parade before passing out. And in those days, you had boots with big studs in, steel studs. You try walking on ice in steel studs, oh, calamity. But there, it happened. Two or three fell down. And it was a shambles, but they accepted it because it was the conditions. But we all passed out.
Yeah. And where were you sent then?
Well, I was ready to join the regiment, the 1st Battalion of the Gloucestershire Regiment, who were then based in Jamaica. And whereas other people, unfortunately, didn't go to their battalions, what they wanted originally, they were sent to other battalions. I personally went to the Gloucestershire Regiment. Yes, so I now leave Bulford and make a train journey to Colchester in Essex, where was the regimental camp.
What was it like there, arriving as a very new recruit? You know?
Bleak, empty, deserted, probably a muster of probably 30 people on the camp, because the battalion is still in Jamaica. And now I'm waiting to be called up into regimental headquarters and say, right, pack your kit, you're off.
How long were you at Colchester?
Only several months, because what happened, the provost sergeant came to us and said, right, the battalion's coming home. They're coming home here. We have to lick the barrack into shape. So for quite a few weeks, we were licking the all the parade ground, the barracks, putting new beds and mattresses in, ready for the battalion to come home.
So you never went to Jamaica?
Never went to Jamaica. No. There's a little add-on to that, actually, but that may come in a little bit later. Yeah, about 30 of us in a camp, yeah.
Do you remember any of those characters, though?
Oh, yes, some of the chappies that I joined with. They came from Bristol, went, there was Morris, I can't remember his first name. There was Dusty Miller. Of course, you all had nicknames. Yeah, and actually, about two or three of us from Bristol actually ended up in the barracks. So we were quite well, really. I mean, there was... but they weren't all strangers, which was quite a good thing, really.
So it wasn't as bleak as it could have been.
Oh, it could have been bleak. It could have been.
So that was a few weeks then, getting that ready.
Yes, getting it all ready.
The battalion returned.
The battalion came home from Jamaica.
At the end of the year, was it?
No, this was getting towards. Yes, it was. It was getting minutes, yes, because towards the end of the year when the battalion came home, yeah. Well, it depends on where you look at it, really. Yeah. The actual going around, looking at different friends and making friends, and then when the actual allocated to the company that I wanted to go into, because now the battalion's come home.
So which company did you go into?
I went into anti-tank.
That was your choice?
In the support company, yes. Mm. I wanted to fire big guns. In basic training, the 303 rifle and the light machine gun, the Piat, which is an anti-tank weapon, in basic training that was.
So, but you decided you wanted to go into anti-tank company?
Yes, yes.
So who was in your company? Who were the NCOs?
The NCO was Lance Corporal Bishop, Lieutenant Barker, Sergeant, Austin, Sergeant Austin, yes.
And what were they like? I mean, you were the new boy.
Well, I was new boy there, and treated as a greenhorn. And of course, I hadn't roughed it like the battalion had, but
in Jamaica,
I mean, if you call it rough it, with the luxurious living in Jamaica that they had. But when you came home and joining the support company, luckily again, two of the chaps that I'd gone through basic training with and joined the regiment with came into that particular company as well, and into anti-tank company, a support company. Yes, yes. So it wasn't alone.
So the first thing I imagine was training you.
Training was then the first time... the anti-tank gun, the first training, was on a six-pounder. It fires a six-pound shot. And that was big enough as it was. And then learning how to practice drill it, and then going live firing at the ranges, yes. Then once you were basically trained, the company commander called me in and said, sorry, we have to transfer you to another company. So I said, any reason why, sir? He said, yeah, you're too small.
Too small.
Too small.
Too small.
Yeah. 5'3.5". Yeah. Too small.
Yeah.